Then Jesus came to them and said, All authority in heaven and on earth
has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples
of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father,
and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them
to obey everything I have commanded you.
And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age.
Welcome to Exploring Missions, connecting mission needs with those equipped by God to meet those needs across the world or across town. And now, the host of Exploring Missions, Bert Harper.
Thank you for listening to Exploring Missions this weekend. We're hoping you're having a good weekend. We're hoping you will take time and worship the Lord Jesus Christ and be in fellowship with fellow believers as you encourage one another, hold each other accountable for attitudes and actions, and so it really helps because that's missional as well. One of the greatest things that I learned about the Bible was it was a missional book. I really did not think it that way until several years, and one of the persons that helped me to understand that, they were several, but one of them was our co-host, Nathan Harper. And Nathan, early on, just shared, and it helped me to understand that it wasn't just a book about salvation. It is. It's not just a book of theology. It is. It's not just a book of history. It is. But it's missional in purpose. That's why we do this program, Exploring Missions. It was born out of that thought that I was doing a program called Exploring the Word. And ever just so often, it would just come up. It's a missional book. And we thought about doing one program a month on missions on Exploring the Word. And then Jim Stanley, the director of the radio at that time, said, hey, how about doing Exploring Missions once a week? And out of that has birthed this program. Nathan, thank you for what you have done and shared and made this program really possible as your idea. And I thank you, man.
Well, God gets any credit or glory in that, and that was, what, 7-8 years ago that we started
doing
that?
Yeah, it was, and it's been a joy for me. We've met a lot of neat people, talked to a lot of neat people, so it's been great, but God has a heart for missions. His heart is missional, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. God is a missionary God. His heart beats for the nations of all the people groups in the world because he knows they were created to worship him. But without the good news of Jesus, they cannot do that. And so in his word, from cover to cover, Genesis through Revelation, you see his heart for the nations and how he has a desire, but also a plan and purpose to redeem a people from every tribe, tongue, nation, and language. And it even starts in the book of Genesis. So that's what we're going to start with today.
Would you mind doing this? We have interviews, and sometimes we do strategies, and sometimes we talk about missionaries that have done the work. But many times we'll take, what does the Bible say about this work? So we want to hear today what God says a little bit about missions and God's heart in the book of Genesis. Would you take us through that?
Yeah, definitely. So recently I've watched a YouTube video. It's about an hour long, from a Bible teacher, a theologian. His name is Michael Morales. He was giving a talk about Israel's theology of missions and how that started in Genesis. And you can see the pattern and the portrait, even the promises of God, all the way from the beginning throughout the book of Genesis for Israel, even in the Old Testament, to be a missionary people. And of course, we can learn from that today and apply it in our lives, even through the lens of the cross and resurrection in the New Testament. God's mission or missions doesn't start in Matthew 28. As great as that verse is and as important as it is, that passage of the Great Commission, we can go back to Genesis. So we're going to do that. And so for Genesis, or in Genesis, you find for ancient Israel, the basis and charter for their vocation among the nations. And for Christians, you find in Genesis the basis and anticipation of the Great Commission. And so that's what we're going to look at today. I'm going to start with a brief review of the sections, each major section in Genesis, and put it together. And as we do, it'll sort of become a blueprint of mission. And then we're going to try to focus on a particular part of Genesis. So If you look in Genesis 1 through 11, we would call that like the introductory narratives. You see the miserable plight of the nations. Because of sin, the nations are in a miserable state. They're scattered. You think of the Tower of Babel and the scattering that happens there. So they're scattered and they're sinfully miserable. But that section answers the question, why? Why does Israel have a mission? Why do we do what we are called to do? Why do we have a mission? And you see a lot of that in Genesis 1 through 11. Genesis 12 through 50 is the rest of the book, and those are the patriarchal narratives. And you could break those up into different stories of different people. But the nature of Israel's mission to the nature, so the nature of their mission to the nations is given in that section. And through that, you see a preview or maybe a foreshadowing of the future. So basically what happens through that throughout the Old Testament, Genesis will repeat itself. It's just a cycle of what God does, what people do, and then that struggle, and then it repeats. And so throughout of Israel's history, through the whole of Israel's history, it's really just a repetition of Genesis where you see the preview of that. So we start with Abraham in chapters 12 through 22, and you see God's plan is revealed. So his plan to restore the nations to himself is revealed. It's revealed to and through Abraham. So it says, through Abraham's seed, the nations will be blessed. And that's a key theme, is the seed. Even from Genesis 3, the seed of the woman. But that comes in this part of Genesis through Abraham. We see later down the line it comes through David. But we know it's through Abraham's seed that the nations will be blessed. So this answers the question, what? What is the goal of Israel's mission? And we know it's the blessing of the nations, for the whole world to experience God's blessing. Then you get to Jacob, and that's in chapters 25 through 35. And through Jacob, we see God's choosing of Israel for service in the among the nations. They're serving the nations. They're to serve among the nations. And that is only by his grace. God chose Jacob to serve him, to be his. His
special
people.
In other words, he wasn't Jacob, the trickster, became Israel. God had to form him and have a purpose for him. That's amazing.
Yes, he gave him a new identity.
He did.
And it wasn't because of how great Jacob was. It was because of how gracious God is. And so through a new identity of God's chosen people, the nations will be blessed. So Israel has to take on a new identity. They have to be given that, just like we do. And so that answers the question, who? Who are the people of the mission? Who are we to become as we live on mission? And then finally, we get to Joseph, the last part of the book of Genesis, 37 through 50. In those chapters, it teaches us that the Lord will restore blessing to the nations through Israel. And so that because of sin, there's been a loss of that. A loss of that relationship, a loss of that purpose. And so through Israel, the Lord will restore those blessings to the nations, but it comes through Israel. This answers the question, how? How does God do this? How will an Israelite ruler be raised up as a king to bless the nations? And that tells us really the whole idea of the pattern. That's one of the main themes in the whole book of Genesis, is that mission or missions flows from kingship, from authority. Under the authority of the kingship, and for us, it's for Jesus, the kingship of Jesus. He's the king. Under his authority, the church will go forward in mission. So God's people go forward in mission under the authority of the king. And so that's kind of a big picture overview of missions in Genesis. We can dive a little deeper in a couple
of
places.
A lot of individuals, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
So God uses individuals even till...
Definitely. All right, so just real quickly, a brief return to Genesis 1. So we see in Genesis chapter 1, people are made in the image of God. And that's important in a lot of different ways. We tend to make the secondary parts of that to be the primary. What I mean is, we see in Genesis 1, 26, and those verses around that part of Genesis 1, that teach us the image of God, the Imago Dei, we say that it indicates personal distinct qualities. And that's true. Like, people have a will. We have thought. We have emotion. We have a spirit. We have a soul. And it does indicate those things. And even through those things, we learn that people have value. Inside of each person, there's value. Whether they're born or unborn, there's worth. There's dignity. And those are important things to hold on to and to believe. But primarily, the idea of Imago Dei, being made and created in the image of God, it indicates something else. Primarily, it indicates authority. We were created as God's royal ruling representatives on earth. So Adam and Eve, they were created as kings and queens over the garden that God put them in. Yeah, they went on and forfeited, abdicated their rule through sin. But the image of God was stamped on humans before the fall. And so the fact remains that God created humanity to rule. In some capacity, in some form, we were made to rule. So, in fulfilling our mission, we are returning to God's creation intentions of authority. Now, saying that in reverse, mission flows from kingship. And so that's one of the things that Genesis 1 will teach us. So with that in mind, that's kind of a thing to keep in the back of your mind as we talk. Let's look at a particular person in the patriarchal era of Joseph toward the end of Genesis. And so as we look at Joseph, actually, let's go ahead and read a story in Genesis chapter 37, verses 1 through 11. And we know the story, and so you can just kind of read it quickly if you don't mind, Dad. But it's Genesis 37, 1 through 11, and it gives us a diving off point.
Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the genealogy of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report to them, to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also he made him a tunic of many colors. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph dreamed a dream that it told to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. They beheld my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream, and he told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to him." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind.
So kind of in that story, and then throughout Joseph's life, you see two or three what we would call motifs, a way of kind of every time you see the word or the story about these things, they indicate something important. So the first motif you see is a garment or tunic in your translation, coat.
Coat.
The coat of many colors as we know it. So the idea of a garment is important in Joseph's life. And so every time you see, read about Joseph in Genesis 37 through 50, you need to take note if you hear or see the word coat or tunic or garment. And so the idea of a garment, it indicates when a garment is changed for Joseph, So a change in garment, either put it on or taken off, it leads to a change in his plight. Think about it. His dad gave him a coat. That was indicating, hey, something's about to change in Joseph's life. After he was thrown in the pit, and later after this, we don't necessarily see what happens. You can read it for yourself. So they take off the garment and put some blood of a goat on it, take it back to the father and say, look, he must have died. There's a change in Joseph's plight. Things are going to change for him and his life. So a new garment signifies leadership. Whether it's the coat of many colors, God's getting ready to give leadership in some capacity, authority to Joseph. He's given a coat in Potiphar's house. Remember, that is removed by Potiphar's wife. And you see the change in garment being a change in his plight. But it indicates, that garment indicates authority. So the giving of a coat is new authority and exaltation. Removal of the coat means a pit of suffering. Mm. And so even in Egypt, where Joseph is sold into slavery, he ends up in Potiphar's home and he becomes a leader. But then after his wife tricks Potiphar and has Joseph, well, he throws him into a prison. The real word is pit.
Yeah.
And so they're suffering for Joseph. So just pay attention to all the coats and garments that Joseph wears. Another motif that's evident in this story that you read is the idea of dreams. And dreams for Joseph always come in pairs in Genesis. There's always two. There's couples of dreams. And so here the two are about the sheaves bowing down and then the sun and the moon, the stars bowing down. But dreams in Genesis for Joseph are used to move Joseph into a place of leadership. So God uses the dreams. So the coat indicates, hey, there's going to be leadership given to Joseph. The dreams are what help get him there. So that the dreams, when they come in pairs, is significant. It's not just one dream, it's always two. And so one way that that's significant is that it indicates what will happen as a result of these dreams is God's appointed will. There's like two testimonies, if you will. God is showing you this isn't just something made up. There's two of these dreams. This is important. This is me that's doing this. And that shows that God has set apart Joseph for authority. There's another motif. It's not in this story, but throughout the story of Joseph, you can also look for the idea of a hand. When there's a hand given or something placed on Joseph's hand, hand also indicates authority and glory. And so those are important things to note as we read these stories.
Nathan, this is new. This is good. This is great teaching. I want you to go on because we want to get as much as we can. You're listening to Exploring Missions, Bert Harper, Nathan Harper, and Nathan is taking us through a journey in the book of Genesis to show God's heart for the nations, and it comes from authority from God, and he's given us authority with his message. Go ahead, Nathan.
Yeah, so as we look at Joseph's life, we notice a pattern through these motifs, a pattern emerge that the pattern is that a righteous Israelite will suffer at the hands of men, but then is exalted to rule by God. So Joseph doesn't stay in that pit that his brothers throw him in. He goes to Egypt. He doesn't stay in that pit or the prison that Potiphar has him thrown into. He's released, and he ends up being second in of all the land of Egypt. He's given a place of authority. He's given a place to rule and to basically serve as king. So that's a pattern that you see. So why is this so? Why is this important? Why is this the way it is? God has exalted Joseph to a place of leadership. For what reason? In order to save. That's what he does at the end of the story. His family, Israel, and other nations come to Egypt because of famine, and they are saved. They experience salvation because Joseph was faithful, and he was put in this place of authority to bring salvation.
If you've been listening to this all the way through, you've come to that part which really highlights his purpose. Go ahead, brother.
Like we said, the pattern is not just here in Genesis or not just here for Joseph. It's throughout the Old Testament. Moses fits that pattern. Joshua fits a lot of ways. There's a lot of overlap for Joshua as well. David fits many of the points of the pattern. And we see ultimately who fits this pattern as well.
Who is that?
Well, it'd be Jesus.
Surprise, surprise.
The Messiah. So yeah. That's what we're going to get to here in the next couple of minutes. So there's a promise of kingship given, and it's given through Judah. We don't have time to read all these places, but in Genesis 49, Joseph promises kingship to Judah, and that's given. The Messiah, in other words, we see the Messiah will come from Judah's line. There's a couple passages in the Old Testament, if you don't mind reading, that kind of indicate this. Psalm 72, 17, and Romans 15, 12.
This is Psalm 72, 17. His name shall endure forever. His name shall continue as long as the sun, and men shall be blessed in him. All nations shall call him blessed. Some people say blessed, but it is blessed, and we really are. And then in Romans, we find this to be read. Romans chapter 15, verse 12. And again, Isaiah says, there shall be a root of Jesse, and he who shall rise to reign over the Gentiles, in him the Gentiles shall hope.
So all the nations, the Gentiles, the people groups of the world, are promised a blessing through Judah, through the line of Judah, and that's where the Messiah will come. So the Messiah will bring the blessing to the Gentiles, to the nations, to the whole world, and that comes through Judah's line. There's a lot of reason, and we don't have time to go into it. There's a lot of reason why Judah was chosen as the line, as the chosen line for this, but it involves redemption, sacrificial atonement, love of a father that Judah is motivated by. And he doesn't start in this place. Remember, he was one of the ones who was the ringleader in throwing Joseph in the pit. So he goes from that point to the end of Genesis, where he becomes a person of leadership, a person of authority, where the Messiah will come through his line. He gets to that point. There's a transformation that occurs in Judah's life. And it's a chapter we don't like to read about, but it's in Genesis 38. And we won't get into that, but you can read on your own and see how God started changing Judah's heart through a very horrible, difficult circumstance.
It's through brokenness, isn't it?
It is through brokenness. It's through suffering and brokenness.
That's always going to be the case.
So basically, Judah recognized his own sin and is humbled and broken by God. But then he's given back. This is a different motif of authority. He's given his staff and his ring back, because he's now finally ready to rule by laying down his own life. And that's what he offers to do to get Benjamin back at the end of the story. Judah says, take me instead of Benjamin, because his love for his father.
Sacrifice. That is so true. And we see that and hear that all the way through the book of Genesis. And this is good, because a lot of people say, well, if I was going to get a Messiah, I'd really have used Joseph and not Judah. But now, through this teaching, we see why Judah was the one.
Yes. So through all this, we see the portrait of kingship, and it's most accurately viewed and displayed in Jesus Christ. So Jesus is the king. He suffers, but he is exalted as the king. He sacrificially atones for his people. And all authority on heaven and on earth, all authority in heaven and on earth was given to Jesus. So then, our response to all of this, and this is the whole point. First, we are to surrender to his authority as our king.
King Jesus.
Yep.
That's the one. And we want you to know that he is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And listen, surrender to him. That is the word that we need to be a part of.
So once we have surrendered to Jesus as our authority, as our king, he gives us that purpose. He gives us that message. He gives us that authority to go as his sent ones into the world. So we become the herald of the king to the nations. And we, as his people, as his church, as his kings and queens, representatives, royal representatives, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, we are to go and announce this good news of the Messiah King. So that's what we are called to do. We're called to go and do that. That may look like being able to walk and live into the authority that he has given each of us in the places where we are. We might not have control over where we go. We might be sent, and it might be feel like a pit right now. It might feel like a prison right now. It might be a difficult place of brokenness and suffering right now. But he might have also got us through some of those and put us in a place of authority. It might be small. It might be a small circle of influence that he has given you, but he's given you something. He's given you a platform of some kind. He's given you impact and influence in somebody's life. And so in some way, you're also a leader. You're also a king or queen, a royal priesthood. So whatever sphere of influence that he has placed you in, part of our role is to sacrificially serve so that our brothers and strangers around us, the nations, will be blessed.
Nathan, I can't help but think the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, authority, and then the Great Commission that we hear read over this program each day that we do Exploring Missions. It says all authority has been given to us. I thank you for taking us through this study because it really, I believe, not only we see the heart of God for missions in Genesis, but we see the authority that God has shared with us, all authority, and it is to go throughout the world to make disciples. And that key word, are we surrendering to authority over us? Are we going and doing what he has for us? So the important issue is where you are. Make sure you're saved. Make sure you know Christ is Savior. And then, as Nathan reminds us again and again, we're on mission for God. If you've been saved, you've been called to represent God in your, would you say, world of influence?
Yeah, your sphere of influence. We've all been given, it might be small. Don't, what is that it says about small beginnings?
Yeah.
Don't neglect
despise
them.
Don't despise them.
So whatever sphere of influence that God has placed you into, it's God that has placed you there. No matter the suffering and the brokenness it took to get you there. And so you have some authority. It's in Jesus' name, but you have authority to make disciples. You have authority to spread the good news of Jesus and to live that out.
Nathan, thank you for taking us through this study. It was one I've learned a lot from. So thank you. We hope you have enjoyed listening to Exploring Missions. Be sure and share this. You can go to afr.net, see the podcast, and share it with others so others can be on mission for God.